Can I tweet our special guest, or is that for later?
Let's just wait. Let's get started.
Okay.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 207 of the PC Gamer Podcast. Today is Thursday, January 14th, 2010. I'm your capable host, Evan Lotti, PC Gamer's previews editor, and I couldn't be more excited about PC gaming. And joining me today in the PC Gamer Underwater Podcasting Submersible are Andy Bauman, PC Gamer podcast producer.
I love the fact that he couldn't be more excited about PC gaming, because it's always good.
It's 2010. There's some amazing things happening.
And Tell us about them, Evan.
they're all worth talking about. We also have Josh Augustine, contributing editor to PC Gamer.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
We also have our tag team of interns, Eric Belsauce and Prentice Getty.
It's really foggy out. Or I guess the fog started to lift.
It's gone. It's gone, thankfully. It was like a wall in front of our office for a little while there.
Yeah, it was like we just had bad draw distance or something.
You're on a console.
Indeed. And we also have as a special guest the PC Gamer Podcast, one of our favorite people in the gaming, writing about games community, Chris Remo, editor at large of GamaSutra.com.
Hi there. I don't have a strap line all worked out.
That's fine.
That was it, what you just said.
Oh, man. Look at that. I'm in front of it.
Chris, why don't you tell us what you're up to these days over at Gamma Sutra?
At Gamma Sutra? Well, like you said, I'm the editor at large, which means I don't really have a specific job. I work on a lot of different things. News is one thing I do. I also work on a division we have called Game Developer Research, which looks into trends and statistics in the games industry. Right now, I'm going through the archive of Game Developer Magazine back from the early 90s, which is pretty fascinating, actually.
I'm sure.
Really cool reading all the stuff that developers were talking about in, 1993. I'm up to about 1996 now, and you see these little articles where, there was a technical article where in every month the author would go and delve into the structure of a game, usually a PC game actually, and work out its file structure and all the kind of technical stuff about it. And he was going into one of them, and he was talking about Warcraft by Blizzard, and he was like, "Last year's Warcraft, a sleeper hit from a company called Blizzard," and it was shocking to remember that that's actually what that game was at the time, in an era where that franchise now destroys the world every day, apparently. So
probably seen the pictures of the developers back in the day when everyone had long hair and like heavy metal t-shirts.
Right. And they had an article about id Software like every single one in this magazine. It was ridiculous. It's kind of funny because that was such a huge deal at the time when Wolfenstein and I remember obviously, but it's been fun going through that. So that's a big part of my job right now as well, getting all that stuff in order.
That sounds terrific. Yeah. I mean, that really sounds like a lot of people would be interested in seeing that stuff again if you decided to republish any of that.
Yeah, we haven't really figured out what we're going to do yet. What we're probably going to do is pick some kind of choice issues that are interesting and put those up for free. But part of the point of the archive is that it's for subscribers to the magazine. So most of it will be, I think, restricted for subscribers, but it is so fascinating that I'm gonna push to have at least a few issues from that era put up publicly.
Terrific. Well, as we mentioned last week, if you listened to last week's podcast, we said that this is going to be our Game of the Year podcast. What that means, of course, is we're going to talk about our personal games year. We're already sort of, if you picked up our February issue of PC Gamer, you know all about our actual game of the year that we mutually decided on. It's Dragon Age.
The March issue, yeah.
Excuse me. I get so put off by our calendar sometimes. Yeah,
that was my game of the year as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, you drummed up a nice little list of 10 games worth mentioning on Gamma Sutra there on the PC, right?
Yeah, well, I did a top I forget even. I think it was top 15 or something, PC mm-hmm. games of 2009, and then my number one is Dragon Age. But then I also succeeded in successfully lobbying that game to number one on the overall Gamma Sutra, you know, all platforms list. So,
well done.
Success.
Excellent. So along those lines, I wanted to ask you guys to sort of make your case for your personal game of the year. And sort of our determining criteria for this was just kind of a game that really genuinely captivated you, not just within the span of a day or a week, but really you found yourself thinking about very often and wanting to come back to and having the best memories with probably of the year. So on that note, Chris, if you're good with starting us off, talk a little bit about Dragon Age.
Sure. Dragon Age was an interesting case for me because I thought this game was going to be garbage. I really was not pleased by a lot of the marketing materials and kind of overall tone.
You don't like new metal? Getting,
yeah, the new metal and just the ridiculously gratuitous blood everywhere and the, you know, just the, it just seemed so goofy and
yeah, we were right there with it. We were like, what?
Yeah, I did another podcast called Idle Thumbs, and we were, that Dragon Age was like our whipping boy for a while because we just thought it looked so goofy and shitty. Yeah. And then
sorry to interrupt. Are we, any chance there's going to be a Idle Thumbs reunion anytime?
You know, it's funny, actually. I don't know if any of your readers listened to that podcast, but we promised in our last podcast, which I think was in October or something, mm-hmm. that we would try and work out a kind of follow-up lineup. And
okay.
Actually, like, believe it or not, we actually got together to record that like 2 or 3 weeks after Idle Thumbs ended. And I had upgraded to Windows 7 in the meantime, and my audio interface did not support Windows 7. And actually, yesterday, I realized that they just released beta drivers for Windows 7, and I installed those, and those worked. So I'm hoping we can actually get start up a secondary, like a follow up kind of less frequent Idle Thumbs in the very near future.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would like to listen. Yeah.
It won't be a reunion because Nick Brecken from the show is on the other side of the country at Bethesda now, but it should be good if we get it going. Yeah. Anyway, what was I talking about? Dragon Age.
Sorry for the interrupt.
So I was still curious though about the game. Obviously, it's BioWare. And I was really intrigued by how much of a PC game it seemed to be. And so I tried the game at a preview event. I think it was Comic-Con, actually, when I first started to think maybe this game actually might be really good. I'd seen the game a few times before then and played it a few times before then, but it was always, you know, combat sequences and stuff, which give you really no meaningful insight into how the larger structure of the game will play out. At the time, I played through the Dwarf Connor opening, and it was this crazy, brutal world of just complete social stratification where your character is just the lowest rungs of society in this really rigid caste system. And I wasn't expecting anything like that at all. And the dialogue was surprisingly spot on, and I actually felt really oppressed by this society. You know, I mean, even just going to a merchant to buy something was a fucking trial. You know, the guy would look, oh, I don't know if you can afford anything for me. And it's just like, are you serious? You're just supposed to sell me a potion. Shut up. And it was, you know, by the time you actually run into another character other than your little sycophantic lackey guy, who actually doesn't treat you like dirt, it was a real relief. And I was really impressed that the game got me to invest enough in that character and his environment and his upbringing that I actually felt that way. And it was really... And so at that point, I'm like, all right, this game is going to be interesting. And so then it came out, I played the Dwarf Noble origin story, which is takes place in the same city, but a different rung of society, and it was totally different, but equally absorbing. You know, you've got this society of these well-heeled dwarf noble families who go to great lengths to appear benevolent and well-read and cultured, And in reality, they're a bunch of conniving assholes who are trying to depose each other and sweep each other out of the way. And that was equally subtle and interesting for different reasons.
Yeah. And again, like that campaign, that origin wasn't even necessarily just for the sake of, you know, being a different type of dwarf than the rock loving sort of pseudo Scottish, dwarves that we're familiar with, right? I mean, they were generally interesting, and they sort of had their own angle while feeling familiar.
Right. Well, so that was the rock still provides.
Right,
do not be fooled about their rock-loving roots.
Well, that was what was so, you know, that is like, that does comprise an interesting aspect of this game for me, that the fact that when it comes to just sort of the basic differences, particularly from a visual standpoint, between these different races and different classes, it is 100% boilerplate fantasy. It's almost like if these races and these and all this stuff that looks like how you know this looks from all these other games and movies and what have you, how might they actually play out in a less idealized fictional situation? And that was interesting to me because I'm not really someone who's – I'm not very into – kind of traditional swords and sorcerer fantasy. I'm not really into fantasy stuff that much in general at all, really. And so that was another reason I was a little skeptical of the game. And I was really skeptical about my enjoyment of it. You know, it's nothing, I have nothing against that stuff. It's just not usually my taste, but they managed to use all of those archetypes, but reframe them, which actually made it all the more interesting to me because here were all of these archetypes and concepts that I usually see as being so boilerplate and so just standard, and yet they're put into this totally different context that I found really interesting. And so that almost in itself sort of added to the experience for me. So I've rambled long enough, but overall, I just thought Dragon Age, and then I got it. I haven't even touched on the interpersonal relationships in the game, which I thought were just some of the best I've ever seen in a game between, not even so much between your character and other characters, but between the characters themselves, the NPCs. Just walking around and hearing these characters form friendships or the opposite, you know, get really annoyed at each other on a regular basis. All of that stuff added hugely to the game for me and was done in a way that I found so much more believable than most games. I find just the dialogue and stories in most games to be just insufferable. But Dragon Age really, I just thought it was several cuts above.
And to speak to one of those last points, I mean, the fact that there's so much content almost, I mean, in terms of the number of party members and the fact that they're willing to leave your party. I mean, in some cases, I think developers are sort of very protective of their content. And obviously, like, you spend all your time developing this, you don't want to cut the player off from that. But in some cases where if you over time made certain decisions and a party member didn't like that and they left your party, I mean, the fact that the game was willing to cut you off from that content in order to make you feel like you made a significant decision and like reinforce the decisions that you made, I don't know, I really appreciate that they're willing to go to that length.
And to me, that's the soul of kind of the PC, I think. I mean, you've got, you know, your Half-Life's and that kind of thing, which that's a different attitude again. That's a very structured on Rails game design. But traditionally, the thing the PC has always excelled at that other platforms have done less, usually, is creating a world more so than creating a very specific experience. And so, to me, the PC is frequently at its best when developers are willing to relinquish a little bit of that rigid authorial control. You know, when they are willing to say, this is the world we've created, have your experience in it. I agree totally. I mean, I think Dragon Age is a great example of that.
Great. It certainly reinforces one of their marketing messages of being a massively single-player game, I think it was. Great. Yeah. Well, that's good praise. Thanks for sharing that. Let's move on to Eric, Mr. Belsas.
I thought long and hard about this, and I can't come up with a PC game that was more satisfying and moving. And for me, like, the best game I played on PC this year, I loved Dragon Age, but Braid was just a phenomenal experience. And it came out on PC this year, so it counts. But
and by this year, you mean 2009, of course. But
We're in 2010. Holy cow.
It's the future now.
But... I mean, I heard lots of my friends playing it on Xbox, and I just kind of waved them off. I was like, oh yeah, it seems kind of cool. That game is brilliant. I've never felt more challenged and more of a sense of just catharsis at the end of a game than I have with Braid. Encourage anyone who hasn't played it to go out and experience that game. Yeah, it's definitely my game of 09.
Terrific. Do you have a runner-up, an honorable mention?
I haven't gotten that far into it, but I have really become absorbed into Dirt 2 recently. But I can get into that probably in what are we playing now. But from what I've seen, that's a really, really, really strong game.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to appreciate what Codemasters is doing almost as an ecosystem for racing games through Grid and through the first Dirt. Just the kind of ideas they're putting forward in terms of making things that are accessible but have a sense of tuning and like really polished menus.
Yeah,
I was bringing that up. It just kind of brings a better sense of luxury and like, because that's kind of what racing games are for part of me, like collecting these very shiny things and moving them through an environment and like having a sense of tempo and.
Oh, definitely.
They get and all like, those notes, yeah.
Like lots of the reviews describe it as like a very arcadey racer, but like I'm not a big racer until now. Like I didn't play a lot of racing games, and for me, this is really in depth. There's tuning and stuff, and I'm sure lots of the people out there who play like Sims are like laughing at me, but I'm really, really enjoying it.
Great. I have to say, I heard some good stuff about Dirt 2, and I'm considering checking it out. But I have become so confused and so lost in the sea of like Dirt, Grid, pure
four-letter racing games.
Like, what is going on? And like 90% of them are from Codemasters. Is that? Like when you talk about an ecosystem, is that deliberate? Are they trying to just create this like menu of four-letter racing games? how am I supposed to know which of those is which? I don't know. It's baffling to me.
I don't think it's on the PC, but it might be on the PC. Blur from Bizarre Creations.
Yeah, there's Blur too. Yeah,
I think that came out for PC. Yeah,
yeah, and they're all sort of vague terms as well. I don't know. It's really interesting that they would want to. I mean, I can understand them wanting to go away from, because I think it might still in the UK call them the Craze Dirt, because that name is a little bit more recognizable, where Rally is more popular over there. But I don't know. It is a little strange.
Well, they named Dirt. They should have named the other one Road. Like whatever you're racing on is what it's called.
You mostly race on dirt. Yeah.
That would have been a lot easier.
Interesting. All right, Andy Bauman, what you got for me?
Oh, geez. I'm only 44 hours into Dragon Age, and I haven't even finished.
Only?
Yeah, I know. See, so that speaks volumes, I think, of what kind of a game it is. Because I don't think I played a game longer than 25 hours this whole year, besides Dragon Age.
I never do that. I mean, I'll admit, I have not finished Dragon Age, and I gave it my game of the year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
I mean, yeah, it's too much. I can't do that.
I was a little hesitant to go ahead and say that it's goaty by not finishing it, but, I mean, what else am I going to give it to? I guess Batman would be my other choice. Braid's a good choice though, Eric. I love Braid. But yeah, Batman was probably close second, if only not for just its polish and how tight it played. Like, and of course, everybody loves Batman.
And I how tight it played on the PC is really impressive for an action
game. Yeah, it was great port.
Yeah, and everybody just wants to be in Batman's shoes, and it was like the perfect fulfillment of everything that is Batman. I mean, you almost saw it, and you certainly saw nods to every villain, but you almost saw all the really good villains in the flesh and got to interact with them. So, I mean, that's just amazing to me.
Josh Augustine, what you got for me? Is it an MMO?
It's not actually an MMO. It's kind of like an MMO.
Because you can say WoW if you want. I mean, you can justify like, well, all of this, you know, X, Y, and Z content came out this year. That made it my game of the year, if you wanted.
Did anyone play Machinarium really fast?
Yeah, I did.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't play it yet. I'm wondering if that would be up there too.
It would not be up there for me, but it was fun.
Okay.
See, picking
as far as adventure games go, I thought Tales of Monkey Island was better than that.
Word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ooh, I dig that. As far as like picking WoW would have been the easy way out. The way I looked at it was, what made me abandon WoW for extended periods of time over the course of the year? And there were really only two games. Dragon Age was for a weekend, but I love Dragon Age. I've beaten it once. I'm going going through it a second time. So that's a given. But the other two was League of Legends, which not only had the best acronym of any game.
LOL.
It actually replaced WoW as my nightly ritual before sleep for a good two and a half months, I think. I might not have gotten my daily quest done in WoW, but every single night I played at least one match of League of Legends. And I'd think about it all day. I'd be researching it online. It is just an incredible game. And the other one is Plants vs. Zombies is my runner-up. I hadn't really played much tower defense before then, and there's just so much attention to detail. A zombie bobsled team. I mean, how can you deny the awesomeness of that? That was great. And when I moved, the very first thing I did, I set up my computer. I had internet, but instead of playing WoW or playing League of Legends, I put on my little vegetable farm in Plants vs. Zombies so my snail could go around and collect gold. That just sealed the deal for me. I love that game.
I was really surprised by that game. This year I got extraordinarily worn out of the sort of international zombie obsession that's been raging for the last few years.
Yeah.
And apparently. I really thought Plants vs. Zombies was just, I just assumed it was going to be a total cash in bullshit nonsense because PopCap does publish a lot of garbage. I mean, they've made a lot of really clever good games, but they have their share of cash ins. And,
blasphemer.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding.
They've made some really good games. They've also made a few that I think are just kind of ripoffs of existing games. But God, I was really surprised by how fun that game was. I played it a lot more than I wanted to admit. It was really good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's good.
I've heard that game come up in a few game of the year discussions, and that just floors me. That's like amazing
Ended up on our top 10 of Etgama Sutra, surprisingly.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even the one who nominated it.
Well, so many people played that. Like, there's no other game that I could talk to, like, almost anybody in the office and be like, oh, have you played this? And they'd say yes. I mean, that's true. People that don't talk with me about games were talking with me about Plants vs.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it becomes like a value-related discussion, if you're saying, like, charm that you received from a game per hour, joy per hour, joy per dollar.
when you're looking at your graph of that at the end of the year. Been compiling. It's true. That one does end up pretty high.
It's up there in the PowerPoint. Yeah. The Excel.
The only thing in recent memory that had more charm per hour, I'd say, is Portal. Like, I can't remember anything that was that small that had that much fun in it.
Was that a condensed? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Along the lines of that discussion, those criteria, if we're talking about the game that really captured our feelings and our time and our energy, you hear me talk all about Arma all the time, and That's certainly it for me. We started playing again this week. I mean, it kind of goes back to what Chris was saying about Dragon Age in completely different context. If we're talking about cooperative shooters, which is pretty much the only way I play the game. But it's a space that I can exist in, and my choices are validated and valued. And, you know, there's a system that happens to be very, very realistic where there's tanks and machine guns that operate, you know, allegedly very close to how they operate in real life. I wouldn't know. And, you know, I can pile in with 10 or so people over Ventrilo, and we'll have a mission that's designed by the mod community because there's several hundred of them that are excellent. And, you know, that's kind of another qualifier for why it's been such a good game for me. It's kind of gotten me back into modding in the way I used to be with Quake 3 and a few other games. And that's been a delightful part of it. But just being able to apply, I mean, sort of casually attack objectives in a way that is completely open, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of an example last night. Like, I mean, the game has a simulated version of the Czech Republic, basically. And it was a night mission. We made the decision to divide our team of 12 people into 2 6-man squads.
Was Bacon?
Yeah.
I was there. Yeah. So squad Bacon.
So we sort of arbitrarily decided, okay, you're Team Bacon, this is Team Tomato. And we're sort of giving out these radio commands to each other, and there's a shared map that everybody has. There's no Team Lettuce. It can be, I don't know.
Like, that was the enemy.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult for me to describe it to everyone this way. I almost feel like it's unfair because this is my experience with the game. It's not necessarily everybody's. I mean, if you just can't play the campaign, you're not experiencing any of this stuff. It's kind of honestly a buggy and like difficult and like poorly optimized thing, with bad dialogue and really kind of shoddy presentation. But if you're playing in co-op with people, I mean, Arma faithfully recreates that feeling of playing Army with your friends in the backyard. You're going at your own pace, which, again, for a shooter is completely refreshing, right? If you're talking about things like Team Fortress 2 and Counter-Strike, where there's so much pressure to just respawn and there's choke points and just those mechanics really don't exist in Arma. And it's a game where I can have fun, you know, saying these kind of role-play radio commands to my friends, and getting shot of a helicopter is a good time. And it's hard for me to explain, but it's really fantastic when that happens.
Yeah, Evan, I have to say, I was listening to your guys' podcast whenever one of the times you were talking about that game, and that's Arma 2 is a game that I would never on my own accord seek out or play. It's just so far from what I ordinarily look into. And all the stuff you were saying about it, very different type of game, of course, but it reminded me a lot of what I was always trying to convey to people about my experiences with Far Cry 2, of just being in this environment, having these tools at your disposal, trying to execute on a plan, and then it happens because you're in this simulated environment, and the stuff that happens is going to be totally dependent on God knows how many factors, you know, what the enemy happened to be doing, what the, you know, which way the wind is blowing, what weapons are in use over there. I mean, all sorts mm-hmm. of things can just create this sort of exponentially divergent situation. And the enjoyment I got, again, very different type of game, obviously, but the enjoyment I got out of that game sounded very similar to the enjoyment you got out of Arma 2, and it actually made me want to go check that game out. So I actually planned to now check out Arma 2, which, again, is a game I would not otherwise have looked into at all. So thanks for that description.
No, of course, and that's really comforting and nice to hear. I mean, I hate to describe it as a game mechanic, but shit happens. I mean, it's a perfect way of putting the way things develop in that game. I mean, the AI is admittedly bad. I mean, in most cases, you're staring at enemies. If you're at any kind of range, they're not going to see you usually, and they're just standing there waiting to be shot. And they're either that, or they oscillate between being basically pop-up targets, like I just described, or being sort of these all-knowing, like 100% accurate
right. yeah.
snipers. And I mean, that's poor design. It's faulty. It's inconsistent. But at the same time, it creates these situations that are entirely yours. I mean, you have ownership over the things that happen, right? The game wasn't written this way necessarily. Or the mission, you don't get the sense that the mission was written this way and everyone's experiencing the same mission. But the things that happen, the decisions you make, and, you know, if you fire an RPG at the right time, if you eject from the plane at the right time, if you pick up a new weapon off somebody and use that against something, or if you take a position in this bunker, I mean, that's your story. That's the thing you're sharing at the water cooler the next day, so to speak. And, that's what PC gaming is all about to me, right? Fashioning your own experiences through modding or through communities, and it's really been a pinnacle for that for me.
Well, I also have to agree with you, Rob. Sorry, real quick about what you mm-hmm. say about AI. I totally agree. I see people complain a lot about games with poor AI, and one, I don't know what games have good AI personally. I think that's like almost unheard of to have games where the NPCs actually operate like humans do. But secondly, I don't see any evidence that it actually necessarily helps that much, at least not at the level of technology and design we've currently reached, you know, who knows 10 years from now. But, you know, when people like Crysis is another example for me, Far Cry 2, those are games where I think they benefit from having essentially fairly basic AI. Like I don't want the game to be like a battle between me and some other highly intelligent, rational enemy who's going to deal with every situation that arrives in a logical human way. I want them to essentially be there as kind of catalysts for like the shit that happens. I want them to be like pieces that work to construct this crazy emergent nonsense that mm-hmm. goes on. And usually the best way that they can achieve that is by being idiots. Like when stuff starts, you know, exploding near them, I don't want them to act in the most rational way possible. Either, you know, it's funnier to me when they either ignore it or when it just totally screws with them and they go nuts. Like, it's, that to me is much more enjoyable than a sort of realistic, natural, effective AI would actually be. And that's not to say, you know, at whatever point in the future when people actually figure out how to make game AI that passes the Turing test, like, you know, I'm sure we'll have brilliant game designs that capitalize that on that and are very effective with it. But I don't know. I've never had an issue with simplistic game AI because we already accept that in a video game, especially if you're fighting against computers, you're going to be better than they are. Like, games are designed that way. I think it's asking too much when people complain about that right now, because
I think it's totally a reasonable thing to say. I mean, I'm having trouble thinking of a PC game that makes the argument for me right now, but if anybody played the first Army of Two, I happen to like that game a lot, on Xbox. And especially if you played it over co-op, I mean, it kind of the same way I mentioned about Arma, you're fighting against pop-up targets, basically. I mean, they're very simplistic. They're always just running at you, really, meaning rarely trying to flank you or do anything interesting or unpredictable. But because the game has kind of an arcadey and like simplistic feel, it just totally suits it. Like, it's the same thing with, Rainbow Six Vegas, the terrorist hunt mode. That's maybe another good example of, I mean, in a lot of cases, you literally have enemies, and that mode in itself is a little bit emergent. You're basically with up to four teammates and you're clearing an area of, say, 40 or 30 terrorists. I mean, literally in some cases, the enemies will be walking backwards through a doorway and like turn their gun over their shoulder and shoot you, like one shot you with a shotgun and like not even see you and like just doing completely unpredictable things. But that in itself becomes a challenge that you have to overcome. Yeah, and like
that stuff forces you to step up to it. I mean, you know, what I was just saying about AI, like kind of brain dead NPCs, that basically also applies to these sort of godlike NPCs who do ridiculous things. I mean, in a lot of cases, that just forces you to be even more extreme and more creative to work the situations out.
Definitely. I mean, I definitely encourage people to think more about what they really value in the game and not just like the technical aspects of, oh, the anti-aliasing isn't perfect or so on. Yeah. Anyway, good ideas. Prentice, your last.
Well, I'm the only one on staff who didn't play Dragon Age, really, so I can't comment on that. But for me, I guess it would have to be Empire Total War, because I was really
nice.
I'm also the only one on staff who put any time into that. I would pick Arma, but, I mean, you picked that, and I don't want to be repetitive. But I think what made Empire Total War so great was just the amount of content and just the difference between... Sorry, Kristen is walking by making faces at me. The amount of content in there and just the way you could choose whichever, there was no, and if you played Rome, I mean, you're pretty much forced to be militant in it. You're basically the Romans. You have to civilize the Western world and you go around and, you know, you have to kill and capture as many colonies as you can. But in Empire Total War, I mean, it was completely different where you can play the Dutch, the United Provinces, and you have no enemies. You just have like a buttload of money and you can just keep building off that and you can, buy allies and just trade. And I mean, that was so much of a change from Rome where you pretty much just kill everything. So I really appreciated that. And I mean, you could spend hours upon hours just on a single campaign and not the story campaign. And I just love that it recreated that time period so well. It was just brilliant in my opinion. And the naval battles were kind of awful.
They're naval battles. Managing sails and looking at the wind direction, right? That's kind of what you're talking about at lunch. Like, there's just way too much to manage. Like, it's too much of a sim, maybe.
Yeah. And they also take an incredible amount of time. Like, even if you fast forward on the highest, you know, thing, it still takes, you know, it can take 2 hours for a naval battle. So, I mean, plus the Total War series has always had an auto resolve for battles, but when you auto resolve it, you know, gives the other team a huge handicap and you almost always lose unless you have a huge, you know, army. And in this, I mean, you could have huge fleet, but if you hit auto resolve and they have like one ship, you're almost always going to lose. And I, you know, the AI there was terrible.
Interesting.
So the naval battles were a pain, but the ground combat was great.
Are you looking forward to Napoleon?
Oh yeah.
I'm stoked for that game.
Yeah, me too.
So remind me of the feature they were talking about in Napoleon. I mean, were they saying there's going to be an adversarial campaign essentially where like an opponent can join the enemy side of your campaign and play against you? Am I remembering
that?
Yeah,
he can control the armies in the battles against you. So it maybe if you aren't such a fan of the AI, you can have a friend hop in and just be your enemy for the campaign, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like the sense of that. I mean, the idea is that there's somebody behind that role that's making better decisions, hopefully, or just different decisions. Even if they're not historically accurate decisions or however you want to describe them, that's pretty cool. All right, gentlemen, thanks for sharing your game, personal games of the year with us.
Real quick, I just want to give my runner-up because everyone,
because
Dragon Age, but I'll promise I'll keep my remarks short. But I just wanted to mention Dawn of War 2 because I had so much fun with that game. So much, like a preposterous amount of fun. I mean, I certainly had more like, you know, pure straight up fun than I did with Dragon Age, for example. Nothing, obviously it's not a negative on Dragon Age. It's a different kind of game, but I played so much of the multiplayer of Dawn of War 2 and it was so clever and so fast paced and cool and, sort of deceptively deep. And I have so much respect for what Relic has done with the real-time strategy genre in the last few years, which is a genre that, you know, is not what it used to be in terms of the number of games released and the amount of innovation going on. So I just wanted to make sure to mention that because I just thought that game was fantastic.
I'd certainly echo that. And it was a really interesting situation for me where I believe it came out in February.
Yeah.
And I mean, I played the campaign, loved the campaign. Love the RPG elements, love accruing loot. I mean, I always describe them as some of the best action figures. I mean, opening that game is like unwrapping new action figures, right? That you want to play with and sort of point around and you're up against these enemies. But when, in October, when the Last Stand DLC came out, it was a total reinvention and like a perfect excuse to refresh the experience for me.
Haven't played that yet, sadly.
Oh my goodness.
Oh.
If you like the campaign, Chris, like get in there, please. It's three player co-op survival, wave based, and
nice.
It's really, and you have persistent loot, so there's a reason to come back and say like, "Oh, I'm level 3 now. I have this new flamer on my orc guy. I'm going to use that." With kind of vaguely like Defense of the Ancients style controls and abilities. It was just like a brilliant move and a great kind of token for fans to come back like me.
Sweet. No, it's good to hear. The only reason I didn't really check it out is because I always get into the situation where, especially towards the end of the year, I'm looking back at what came out and I'm like, oh God, look at all this stuff I just totally missed. And then Dawn of War 2 for like the entire, you know, Q1 of this year, I just played that like obsessively. It wasn't even so much the campaign. I did really enjoy the campaign as well, but I used to write for Shaq News, the website. And I'm still kind of active in the community there. And, you know, the community gets all into whatever multiplayer game is out at the time. And I was just playing Dawn of War online with those guys like every day for months, starting in the beta, actually. By the time Last Stand came out, I played so much of that game that I felt like it was like unfair to all the other games I hadn't played yet, especially because I had to do game of the year deliberations and stuff. So that's the only reason. It's not really a great excuse, I guess, but I'm glad to hear it was pretty awesome.
We loved it. Fantastic. All right. So one of the news bits we did want to cover for you guys this week, really interestingly, I mean, the way that the circumstances that this was revealed were interesting to me from Irrational Games, which was Irrational Games and then was 2K Boston, and now is Irrational Games again. They decided they wanted their name back. They revealed that they were working on a zombie-themed game called Division 9, and this was revealed by Game Informer and sort of as a sort of a larger move by the developer itself to rebrand itself. And now they have a podcast hosted by Sean Elliott. They're doing a lot of like community behind the scenes stuff, which is cool. But sort of as a way to draw people to their new website, they revealed the fact that in 2000, this would have come out allegedly around the same time BioShock did, maybe even a little bit sooner. And then they're basically pitching the next SWAT game, if you guys play the SWAT series on PC, to their publisher, and they wanted to make Zombie SWAT. And that has gone as far as to like really convert the game. There's a video hosted on Game Informer that shows a fair amount of gameplay. But the publisher wasn't interested in it at all, and they didn't follow through with it. And now they see Left 4 Dead now, and how successful that's been. Because that was sort of the pushback they got in allegedly of that. There's no way, you know, even in the world of Resident Evil, this, you know, zombies won't be big in 2005. There's no way that's popular. And of course, that's interesting against your comment, Chris, that they're oversaturated everywhere right now in movies and t-shirts and everything. I know, Prentice, you were mentioning you'd watch the video, and what did you think of it? I know there's a little bit more of an emphasis on like base building. Is it fair to call it base building? I mean, it's still a first person shooter. It's like SWAT, but
yeah, they didn't show that in the video, but if you listen to the Irrational Behavior podcast, they were talking about how you were supposed to go from base to base and collect survivors, and you'd have to turn on the power in the town and gather food and resources and whatnot. And if you just watch the video, which we'll put in the show notes, it just looks so much like Left 4 Dead years before. And it's funny if neither Left 4 Dead or, well, this game obviously wasn't made, but somebody would have done it eventually. I mean, that cooperative zombie, you know, type of gameplay, I think everyone loves that.
Yeah, the one thing that really I noticed in the video was it had a lot slower pace than Left 4 Dead. There were no, like, at least in the video, there are no big moments where, you know, the horde is coming or you have to bunker down or, you know, they're chasing you, so you got to grab the Coke out of the supermarket and sprint. It was very methodical, very much like the old SWAT games.
Were they slow zombies or fast zombies?
They were a little bit in between. I mean, they sort of animated slow, but they could sort of lurch forward a little bit quicker and then slow down again. They weren't molasses slow by any means.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I did like the animations for the zombies. I thought it looked really cool. Like, just the way they looked really freaky, and I was just doing it here at my desk, but you can't see it, but like, you know, they're lurching around with their arms. It looked really cool. But yeah, I thought the one thing that missing was that kind of change of pace that Left 4 Dead has, and make sure you never feel too safe. You're never going the same speed for very long. You're constantly having to adjust to the circumstances.
You can certainly see like the influence of, you know, when they're designing this, of Resident Evil in there. So, of course, some of the level design is much darker, much harder to read. It definitely has more of a horror vibe than Left 4 Dead does, which I've never really even felt scary when I've been playing Left 4 Dead, except for maybe the first one or two rounds that I played it. But you definitely see a distinction in their style of game. Though there are like some similarities. I think if I was interpreting it correct, at one point there's a character that throws like a firework, I guess, like almost as a pipe bomb to distract zombies. And there's some car alarms going off and things like that.
You had to barricade doors as well. That was the whole tactical part of it. The change the pace.
At the very least, we'd encourage you guys to check that out over at GameInformer.com.
We'll link it in that.
Yeah, really an interesting look at what might have been. And honestly, like, those are so very rare because it seems like, I don't know if this is your opinion, Chris, but developers really want to hold on to those ideas. Like, they guard them safely, any games that might have been scrapped or not carried out entirely.
Yeah, I mean, there are also frequently NDAs and things like that, especially if they were done under the auspices of a publisher. I haven't actually really looked at this, so I don't know entirely what the situation was, but there are often legal things going on too.
Yeah, of course. All right, fantastic. So before we jump into your questions this week, and there are some fantastic ones, thanks for sending them in, we wanted to mention that we have a large number of Star Trek Online beta codes. The open beta is going on right now. It's sort of deceptive because you actually do need a key to get into the beta, even though it's open. And if you'd like one of those, all you need to do is send us a audio question this week. Just send us an MP3 under 60 seconds long to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to give you a beta key, of course, if you send a phone question to 877-404-1337, extension 724. But we're not exactly sure how to... I'm not sure if we're comfortable calling people back via phone. So just shoot us an email if you want one. Send us a question. We'll be happy to help you out with that. And we'll of course, I'll be sending beta keys to this week's question submitters as well.
Yeah, and if you get in the beta, be sure to let us know what your username is and stuff, because a few of us are cruising around there, and I know I want to hook up with some PC Gamer guys, maybe start our own little Starfleet, which would be awesome. I forget what they call guilds in there, but...
I think they're fleets.
Yeah. So just let us know when you jump in the beta what your username is and stuff. We can get in there and go kill some Klingons.
Indeed. All right, Andy, go ahead with whatever you got.
It's Jacob from Oregon, just now tuning in to PC Gamer. Learned to love it. So I was just wondering what some good tips are for finishing games, because I have a hard time committing. So if you have any tips or tricks to share with me, I'd love to hear them. All right, great podcast. I'll see you guys later. Bye.
Oh, man. Honestly, a very practical and interesting question, because that's something we deal with, because we sort of get attached to our favorite games. I mean, TF2, I've been trying to put down for the longest time, but they keep updating it. And even though I don't really want to play it, I don't know why I keep playing it. And I have things that I should be playing sort of professionally. What's the best advice you guys can give?
Have your internet knocked out. I moved this weekend, and I don't have internet at my house, and so I'm forced to play all those offline games that I hadn't been able to play yet.
That is how I finally finished Oblivion a few years back. I didn't have internet, and I just battled through Oblivion.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that helps me is if someone you know is playing the game at the same time, it really helps, because then you can be talking about it and going through it. So I don't know, if one of your buddies is picking up a game that you haven't finished, maybe jump in it at the same time with him and play through it, so you can kind of talk about it together.
Yeah, I know a few people in communities that sort of say, like, hey, let's create a game of the month and let's all play that together, even if it's an older game. So that's not a bad attitude, sort of the buddy system, if that makes sense.
Hey, guys, a PC Gamer. I'm wondering how I would get into Arma 2. I mean, my computer that I have now isn't really, I don't know, it's an old Dell, it's not really up for it. My brother's built his, $1,500 computer a couple months ago, so I'd be able to play on his. I'm just wondering, I mean, I don't know how the community is, and I'm not sure if the community has kind of died down, the game's gone out, or if I'd even be able to find anyone to play with at this point. So I'm just kind of asking you guys, I've seen screenshots, and I've seen a lot of videos, and I'd love to get into Arma 2. I'm just wondering, how would I go about that? And yeah, I guess that's it. So keep up the good work, guys.
I'm so thrilled to be able to have the opportunity to help somebody out, to evangelize this guy.
Don't you post game nights for Arma now?
I do. Yeah. So for one thing, and this is a good opportunity to advertise.
I wish I could jump in those. I just never have. I'm like, oh, I'm doing something else, Evan. I want to play.
It's okay. It's okay. Steamcommunity.com/ what is it? /groups/PCG. Yeah. And if you join our Steam group, you'll get updates about Team Fortress 2 and other game nights that we have. They're usually very last minute planned, basically when I want to play games and I don't have people in front of me to get them in there. So other than that, in a more general way, yes, the Arma community is vibrant. It's one of the, in the here and now, it's one of the world-class modding communities and happening on the PC, if I have to say. If you're looking for guidance, I'd probably go to armaholic.com. That's kind of the hub that everybody's kind of agreed that the best mods and maps and utilities go to. But in terms of just understanding the game and sort of getting a feel for it, honestly, the single-player tutorial is a little rough. It's kind of military drills and like learning how to shoot weapons, and that's fine for learning the basics, but like the best way to teach yourself how to like how vehicles work in the game and just how different systems work in the game is just hop into the editor and just throw some objects down that you want to play with, kind of like a sandbox. Think about it as a sandbox if you want to drive a tank or fly a plane, and just set one of the characters as your player, and you can just hop in and sort of pick up different weapons and play with them and shoot them and kind of get used to things. If that doesn't sound guided enough to you, kind of a good compromise between the editor and the single player tutorial is what's called the Armory mode. And the armory mode is kind of like a, you hop in there, you choose a weapon or a role, and it hands you that weapon or that vehicle, and it basically gives you randomly generated objectives. You're in an empty environment, and it says, like, get from point A to point B, or defend this structure, or attack the structure and steal something and bring it back to us. And it's just kind of a really, like, casual way of delivering the gameplay, and honestly, a really nice introduction to everything else. So that's really the best way I can offer. But I'd honestly be happy to give you any guidance additionally. So feel free to find me via our Steam group as well.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I wish I could have jumped in earlier, but I just couldn't. And you know that, did you read about that guy who, like, his face got sewed onto a soccer ball?
Yeah, I saw that story. That was on
the list. Was so, that ruined my day.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
And now you've ruined all of our listeners' days.
It just was, it was so, it haunts me. I mean, you can probably tell it haunts me even now. Wow. And you didn't hear about that?
No, I missed that.
But there's a drug cartel in Mexico.
Yeah, really unpleasant type thing. And I guess, I don't know, words were exchanged. And so, like, they cut him up into 7 pieces and they sewed his face onto a soccer ball, which is so not cool. You know what I mean?
That's right. So apparently, since you guys read the same news sites, Logan, this is Chris Remo, by the way, from Gamma Sutra, our special guest.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Hey, bad.
Sorry to barge in like this. I do that.
Well, it's cool. You guys have similar interests in drug cartels and.
Yes.
I have a Google alert set to face stitched to soccer.
I found one better
yesterday, and I'm like, oh, hot dog.
I have a rotating red light in my room that comes on.
I've been thinking about creating.
When you have the face and soccer ball thing.
Yeah.
Hi, and I'm going to go. So.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, Logan. Thanks. That was a delightful interlude. Let's take our last question.
Hey there, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Brent from Arvada, Colorado. I was wondering, since most PC gamers seem to really hate console ports, especially the badly ported games, what are some games that you would like to see that come from a console but could be ported very well onto a PC? Or what are some of the best console ports you've ever seen? I think that Devil May Cry 4 is a really great console port, while all of the others in the series have been either non-existent or pretty bad. I'd love to hear your responses to this. Keep up the great work. I listen to the podcast every week, and I subscribe to the magazine because of the podcast. Thanks.
Hooray. In terms of games that would work on a PC that are on console, gosh, I don't know. That's kind of
anything that's a shooter, really. I mean, like Army of Two, for example, would probably work well.
Right.
Is that not on PC?
Nope.
It is not.
Oh, bummer, dude. Like, he brings up the Capcom ports, and those have just gotten really good on the PC, like Street Fighter 4.
Well, they finally took them in-house.
Okay.
They did them through another company whose name I can't remember for years and years. Presumably because it was just dirt cheap for them to do that. But they, as of their current generation, like as of the games that have been made
Street Fighter
straight up from the ground up on their current generation engine, they get all that stuff running on PC first anyway. So, it's been pretty easy for them to do an actual real PC version as opposed to just kind of an after the fact port later. I mean, they still come out later because they put less priority, obviously, on getting them out. It's a smaller market for them, but, they're doing it with their actual real team, so that's why they've been turning out so well. Because that
very cool.
Devil May Cry, Lost Planet, Resident Evil 5. I'm not even a big fan of really any of those games, but they all had really great PC ports.
Where's the Ace Attorney port? That's the one I know. Actually, I heard they were putting out the first one on PC like a long time ago. I read about it somewhere, but I don't know what happened to that. I love those games.
It just came out on the Wii, so you never know.
Yeah, the
Wii. I mean, those games do have. I mean, that genre does have its roots on the PC. So
honestly, like, I really wouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't underestimate the potential popularity for something like that. I mean, you look at a game like Torchlight. I mean, correctly priced, and sort of correctly proportioned, a game can really get that buzz on the PC very quickly.
It's true.
And it's a very, I mean, even more so than Torchlight, those are games with very low asset production costs, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's like 2 or 3 frame animation most of the time, like simple backgrounds. I guess the main issue is that they're all really low res.
I'd like to see FIFA 10 be ported back on PC since they took it away, and NHL 10 for that matter.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I had this weird issue. Like, so I don't know. Maybe I should mention this, but so I have an older generation Xbox. I tried to play NHL 10 on my Xbox, and
it's good.
When you say older generation, you mean like early 360 or Xbox One?
Early 360, and it wouldn't run.
Wow!
Inexplicably,
really?
it said it couldn't read the disc. So I did a little investigating. You know, obviously the disc is fine, and by removing the hard drive, I could play the game. It would read the disc, but if the hard drive was in, it would not read the disc.
Wow! So much for it just works or whatever.
Yeah. Someone, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say that's like a widespread problem, but someone sort of mentioned to me, I don't know if this is true or not, that older generation Xbox hard drives aren't compatible with new games or
Jesus.
Some new games. I don't know.
That was
really surprising to me because I don't know. That's just me.
I have a launch 360 and I don't have that problem, although admittedly I don't use it very much, but it's my launch machine.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's actually not. You know what? It's not. This one's. I had to get a new one. I'm sorry. So who knows? I don't know.
It's a mystery.
I have no useful input here, as it turns out.
In terms of good games we'd like to see on PC. I mean, I'm trying to think about what the modding community would go crazy about, and something like something like Crackdown. I'd like to think would go over really well. I mean, I played that game with cheats after I beat it the first time on Xbox, and it was a blast. Like being very overpowered and. Having infinite ammo.
Was great.
But I can imagine what someone would do with, like, you know, customized vehicles and like importing of different objects and new weapons and.
Oh yeah, I mean, even something like GTA 4, which is much less of an insane game than Crackdown.
Yeah.
People have still done some pretty funny mod stuff to that game, so.
No kidding.
I'm sure they could go nuts with Crackdown, and I mean the next game from that studio is on the PC, so we'll see.
Indeed, yeah. APB, we're looking forward to that. All right, guys, thanks for your comments this week, and special thanks.
Actually, I mean, should we reiterate, for example, like, because he did ask also what games have good PC ports. You know, in addition to the Capcom stuff, Batman, as we mentioned, has a great PC port. I thought Tomb Raider Underworld was kind of like an underrated game in general.
Oh,
I actually
really
enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Like, as far as tomb raiding games this year, I personally enjoyed that more than like Uncharted 2, which I didn't think was that great.
Wow.
But
I haven't tried Uncharted 2 yet.
I don't understand what people get.
I got it for Christmas. So I'll play it.
It's
soon.
Yeah. The story and stuff in Tomb Raider is garbage. It's the stupidest most garbage you've ever perceived in your life, but as a game it's pretty fun.
Don't even get me started on that story. I had to go to Wikipedia just to figure out what the hell was going on. Anyway,
Oh my god, it was terrible. And then, oh my god, any game where your zombie mom appears and your character dies, not ironically, like, that's not going to be taken seriously by anybody.
Yeah.
But I really liked the actual exploration stuff in it, and that had a really good PC version, I thought.
The story in that in those games have been awful since the first one on PlayStation. They've always been terrible.
I remember Logan was telling me about a PC accelerator review where I think it was Tomb Raider 3. Okay. And they literally republished their Tomb Raider 2 review and like crossed out or like redacted a few things.
That's so like, funny. I have the entire run of that magazine. I don't remember that.
I don't know. I haven't seen it myself, but that's how he described it.
That's great. I got to dig through my stack.
You should.
Do you guys remember? Did anyone play the first one? And like the final boss of the game is just like this mouse-shaped like egg with like a red head or something that just crawls around. Does anyone remember that?
Is it an actual egg?
I don't think I ever made.
Here, I'm gonna link. I'm gonna link to
it. I played the first game on PC, but I'm pretty sure I never beat it.
The final boss was like awful. I remember.
Is it just like a poor use of polygons, or
yeah?
Okay.
I'll put it in the show notes so people know what we're laughing at.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, let's do our. Let's
wow, that's goofy looking.
It's like a weird turkey skeleton.
Yeah.
Before we depart for the week, let's do our playlists real quick. Andy Bauman, what you got on tap?
I'm still working on Dragon Age, but like the last, so I've had some game time the last two nights, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna play Dragon Age, but first I need to get this gold medal on Trials HD for the Xbox. and there goes my
game.
There goes the entire night. That game is so good.
Is that sort of taking its pole position as your like Peggle replacement now that you after you
absolutely.
You took all the challenges in the original Peggle, is that right?
And Peggle Knights.
Wow.
Yeah, but Trials 2 came out on Steam like at least 2 years ago. But it's different. It's so much better the one on Xbox Live. So if anybody's like, oh, I played that game on PC, it's not very good. It's so good on Xbox. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a game I really wish they'd port. Actually.
Yeah, it's I was gonna bring excellent. That up. So if they could bring the improved version back on the PC where it started. That would be great.
All right, Chris, other than Magazine Archive Hero, what have you been playing? Yeah.
Not tons of stuff, actually. I've been playing mainly Osmos, which I really like, and, oh, God, I hate saying the name of this game because I don't know how, but it's A Reckless Disregard for Gravity.
I was playing that, too, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite games of this year. I take any opportunity I can to tell people how cool and fun and just funny that game is. So I'm doing it right now. That game
are
is super cool and fun and funny.
Am you I got dying? A siren going.
Sirens.
Oh, no. That's, God, that's legendary on the Idle Thumbs podcast. It's I live downtown in San Francisco, like on Market Street.
Oh, so that makes sense.
It's just like the corridor that runs through the entire city. So it's where emergency vehicles go and they have to get somewhere fast.
Yeah.
So that's what I get to hear a lot from my apartment.
Terrific.
Yep.
Yeah, I still need to check out that's a good reminder for me.
It's super fun.
Cool.
It's a blast. And the cool thing about it is the game's all about base jumping. Basically, you jump down and you just steer yourself in a free fall through kind of abstract buildings and you rack up point multipliers and stuff. I mean, it's very arcadey fun. But what's really nice about it is how clearly the sense of fun these guys had making the game, how clearly that persists through to you as a player. Just the whole direction of the game, just everything about it, the vibe and the sound design and the little graphics touches here and there, like you really get a sense for the kind of feeling, like the tone that they feel. That inspired them to make this game in the first place. The game was inspired by like a YouTube video of a guy base jumping or something. And they got like really obsessed with this idea and decided to make a game about it. And I'm so happy that in today's day and age, it's still possible for a group of guys to see something that they think is cool and say, we should make a game inspired by that. As opposed to, you know, I'm going to make this epic tale of this and this that has like no relevance to your life at all, really, right? Like it's nice when people can just launch off something more personal and really inconsequential and just make something fun about it. So that was, and it totally comes through in the game, and it's also just a blast to play, and it's got Steam achievements if you care about that, but it's a really fun game.
It's great that passion can be conveyed. I like the idea of that.
Exactly, yeah.
Eric Belsas, what you got?
I haven't had internet like Josh, because we actually just got a apartment together, so yay! But
cuddle hut.
You can tell us. You guys move into an apartment together, and it's very cool. It's okay.
Yeah. We're having a good time. But so I've been having to play offline games, and I decided, to get really dig into Dirt 2. Which has been an incredible experience. I'm lucky enough to be playing it with a Logitech G27, I think, like a fancy steering wheel with a shifter, so I can use manual gears, and it's a blast. I'm really, really having a blast with it. I can't say enough. I haven't played it with just like a keyboard and mouse, so maybe that's not as good, but I'm having a lot of fun.
Good. Peripherals, Ray. Another victory yeah. for peripherals. Great. Josh.
Been playing lots of Dragon Age. I'm trying to go through all the origins because I'm going to play it a second time and I want to play through all the origins so I can pick the one that I like the best. And I've been staying awake till like one or two each night this morning trying to get through it. I've gotten through all of them. I only have half of the mage one to go left. Standouts were definitely Dwarf Commoner. Like Chris, I love that. Just the way it makes you really feel the part. Dwarf Noble is great, and of course, City Elf. And Dalish Elf was just terrible and short and uninspired.
Great. Was Dalish Elf?
Is it
the Mage Tower one? Or no?
No, Dalish Elf is like the elves that live out in the tree. You basically go through a cave, talk to a bunch of people, then go through that exact same cave, and then it's over.
Yeah. Outstanding. And in Josh-related news, we're going to share an interesting video of Josh in a, what do you call it? It's basically a sleeping bag suit.
Yeah. What was the brand name on that? It's like...
That is the Selk bag. S-E-L-K. Yeah.
I prefer to think of it as a form-fitting sleeping bag that accentuates my features.
your Michelin man-like features?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, we'll share that with you guys in the comments thread. And Renus.
I was just playing we're doing this thing on indie games, next issue. So I've just been playing, tons and tons of small indie games. So I'll just kind of give a few shout outs. Spelunky is one. I think it's by Derek Yu or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's this little, you play this little Indiana Jones type guy. It's like a little platformer, but everything is randomly generated. All the levels, and it's really great so far. I'm having a blast, so definitely check that one out. The letter V six times. That's another one.
I forgot to mention that, but I'm playing that as well. Yeah.
And a reckless fall, or what is it?
Disregard
for gravity. Yeah. I think that's mainly it. I think there are a few more. I'll post them in the links.
What do you think of VVVVVV?
I'm not too far into it, but I really like it so far.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I like the music too.
I'm not happy to hear you're not too far into it because I really need help. I'm like, it's not a very long game and I'm shamefully stuck.
Hard.
I cannot find the last, like the game is structured. You have to find six crew members and I can't find the last one. I've explored like the entire map and I must have missed this gym or
something. I'm not even that far in. I'm kind of just at the beginning still, but it's really hard. But
it's hard.
I like it so far.
It's really fun though. Yeah. It just came out too this week, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll link everyone to it. So see if you enjoy it, please donate to them.
As for myself, I've been playing mostly Arma every night when I get home from work. I've been trying to find some more time to put into Zombie Driver. I don't know if anybody else played that, but the best
I've
way
heard
I can
of it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, it's kind of a budget title, but it's Crazy Taxi meets Diablo meets Left 4 Dead.
With what?
Very little Left 4 Dead. I mean, it's isometric, right? So you're a vehicle.
Those are some amazing games.
Yeah, I know, but it's not nearly that amazing. But it's the concepts. You come together Voltron style and create something.
But, sweet.
But basically, you're driving through a city and you have to pick up survivors. And there's zombies that slow you down if you get too close to them. I mean, of course, you can push through some of them with your vehicle and you can. But they do damage to you if you slow down next to them. They sort of bang on your car, and there's just certain zombies that throw barrels, or there's zombies that explode, kind of like the boomer. And you're also upgrading your vehicle and getting new vehicles between rounds with like flamethrowers and like nitrous and things like that, or more armor. And it's, I don't know, I think I'm mostly just playing that game to play an isometric game because I like that perspective. It's relaxing, and you just sort of WASD your way around the level and crash it through some zombies, and it's simple and fun. All right, so before we depart for this week, a few shout-outs. Unfortunately, Gary Whitta was not able to join us this week, but he has a very good reason. He has a movie coming out on Friday, I guess, nationwide, The Book of Eli. So if you're inclined to support him, if you're curious about what Denzel Washington's up to lately, we'd encourage you guys to check that movie out. And once again, if you're interested in the Star Trek Online Beta Key, we have a bundle of them. So please throw a MP3 question at us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Right, on behalf of PC Gamer and like to say thanks to Chris Romeo for taking his precious time in the, to join us on the podcast. Really big
thanks
fan of work. And yeah, just really great to have your thoughts on games of the year and everything else. So until next week, guys, have a good weekend.